Experience Seaside Golf this fall in Ocean City, Maryland. Challenge yourself on 17 championship courses designed by legends like Jack Nicklaus and Arthur Hills. Enjoy breathtaking views as you tee off at Eagles Landing. Relish the coastal scenery at Lighthouse Sound. Or discover why Ocean City Golf Club is one of the Mid-Atlantic's premier fairways. Whether you're fitting in a quick round during a family vacation or going all in at a golf getaway, fun is always in play at Ocean City, Maryland. Plan your trip at oc-ocean.com.
Well, on Twitter, it's at Jay Cameron Show. And as I am always fond of saying, if you're driving about town, thanks for listening to us on 93.3. If you're listening or watching, doing both on YouTube, War Chant TV, thumbs up, subscribe, like, share, do all the things that help all the others that want to do the same. And I will get to some football questions. Somebody asked some during the break there. I'll circle back on some of this. We had a little fun towards the end of the last hour. We are adrift now, folks, officially, in the time of the year. And it's not as bad as it was, say, a year ago, because last year we had no baseball run to speak of. There was nothing to divert your attention away from the fact that we were officially entering into the doldrums of summer, right? Last year, you just headlong into that summertime with 90-something days to go because baseball sucked. Not this year. This year, baseball was good. You're like, oh, I got another game to care about. I got another result to take a look at. I've got something to divert my attention from, you know, the summer months without football. Yeah, you had a good long run. I mean, we're going to wake up on Monday and be all set to the tune of like 59 days till college football starts. And again, it's worth noting for those that anguish over that period of time that, you know, if you don't have baseball on a nightly basis to watch, and I do, Major League Baseball still enthralls me, but it doesn't to everybody, and I understand that. For you folks, you're just hanging on for dear life. But remember, you're helped out again in two ways this year. Florida State is the first game, and so there it is that camp will get started sooner than it normally would, and you'll have actual practice talk, and we'll have an opportunity in July, of course, to go to Charlotte for the ACC kickoff and kind of find out what's what. It will be interesting to see how well-received the Florida States and Clemsons of the world are at this year's ACC kickoff. But some things to look forward to in the interim: recruiting, as I alluded to last hour. And it is a big, big, big weekend for Florida State in the world of recruiting. And that does capture the imagination. That is something that you want to watch. And I think, too, the other part of all of this is that the expectations are so high. It's funny, during the break, I was reading an article. It's list season, in addition to we've now officially entered into those summer months, right? But it's list season, and I have admitted numerous times on the air that I'm a sucker. I'll click on your list. You got me. What else am I going to do? Let me see if your list sucks or not. That's the way I approach all the lists. Oh, you got a list, do you? Let me be the judge of whether or not this list sucks. So I click on it at all times, and I got one during the break, which was which team is under the most amount of pressure to perform in 2024. And the teams listed, Tom, were Alabama, no. Clemson, no. Florida, maybe. Miami, yes. Ohio State, Penn State, Southern Cal. Those were the teams that were listed.
Okay. I've got a short list. On that short list actually would be Alabama. From a recruiting standpoint, you're under a lot of pressure to prove that you can do something akin to what Nick Saban did. So it's not he's on the hot seat. It's their image is under an awful lot of pressure. So I would put them on the hot list. But USC has to be way the hell up there. They didn't get anything close to what they wanted to out of Caleb Williams' tenure. They need to make stops on defense. That, to me, is a program that's under an awful lot of pressure.
It begins with Miami, Tom. The list begins with Miami. How does it not? This, like, it's so funny. I know that it is a perennial fun topic of the U is back. Let's make fun of the U. They like to tell everybody they're back. I think there's some substance this year to what they bring to the table on the field. It's not the rhetoric off the field that I'm looking at. It's the quality of the talent that they have on the field that could finally see them legitimately be somewhat back. If they squander this Cam Ward year to go along with what is a very good defensive front and a doable schedule, then that's it. You wash your hands. That's it, right? You, at some point, you're buried because they can't get out from under the contract with Mario. And if he can't win with this group this year, I don't know that you would have any reason moving forward as a recruit, more importantly, to believe that he's going to win next year and the year after. You got to be Miami.
Agreed. They'll try to continue to throw money at the problem, which is what they do.
But they've already done that in a way that went above and beyond what they've done in any year previous. They wanted to bring their guy back in. He's a Cane through and through, was a very good player on the offensive line for them, was said to completely understand Cane culture, the surrounding areas, the ability to recruit players in South Florida. And we do know, let's not kid ourselves, one of the reasons Miami hasn't been able to get all the way back, besides those sorry facilities and not having a campus stadium and all those other things, is the fact that they can't, I mean, they can't keep people from just cruising on in down south and taking their players that they want. The Clemsons of the world, the Florida States of the world, the Alabamas of the world, the Georgias of the world, programs throughout the Southeast have just wandered down south and said, yeah, we'll take him and him and him and him and him. And Miami has been powerless to do anything about it.
He's wound awfully tight, that guy, on a game day. We all know that, the game day management stuff. But I recall that you're speaking to, does he get Cane's culture? One of the first things he did was remove the turnover chain. There's nothing more Cane's culture than the turnover chain celebration.
I actually like the turnover chain. I thought it was probably one of the best things Miami had ever done.
It's who they are. Like, exactly. It's fun. That's what they're about. That's what they're about. And you're right. They were the originals to do it. And they should have embraced that. If he understood Cane's culture, he leans into that. I get he's a part of the program, but he's like, we need to get serious. Really?
Well, listen, I can argue it both ways. You have to have accomplished something to really earn the right to, you know, to have fun and be goofy. Like you gotta do something of substance before you can embrace some of the silliness on the edges.
Do you? Because the last 20 years of Cane culture suggests you do not have to. And that's 20 years. That's a long time.
Right, but that's what he's bucking against. He's saying, no, man, put all of these childish things away. We're trying to win some games. Now, maybe once we reestablish ourselves as being worthy of having that swagger that we brag about at all times, then perhaps I'll let you engage. But in the interim, let's go ahead and try to focus on our job. Let's win some damn games. I can see it both ways is the point I'm making. I can understand the argument.
When one searches to be worthy, often what they will do is bend the knee, put it on the ground, and bow before that which they are asking, am I worthy enough? He does not accept that the knee must touch the ground, does Mario. So there's that as well. He's just, they're under pressure. And if it's a close game down the stretch.
Oh, no, you don't trust him. No.
Oh, no, that's when you tune in like, hey, by the way, did you notice that Cal and Miami are tied in the third quarter? You may want to run to your television.
Oh, of course. And it's awesome. I love watching that. And it's usually in front of a half empty stadium. So there's no, like, you know, no charge to be born from the enthusiasm of fans cheering you on to cross the finish line. It's like, oh, here we go again. 50 people here, and we're down 10-3 in the third against Cal. Son of a bitch! That's what it is for them, you know, and I love it.
They ran for 6.5 yards per carry in the first quarter, but they're throwing it around the lot because they've got to play to Cam Ward and make sure that Cam Ward is featured. And so they keep turning it over. Like, you come on, those ingredients, that smells like a meal that they would cook down there.
By the way, let me respond to your point about Alabama. I think it's a worthy point to make that from a recruiting standpoint, like the very high end, best of the best recruiting standpoint, I mean, by definition, you now are going to be watching very closely because for so long they had it on lockdown, had the best coach of all time in college football, and they were machines. Their worst years were 10-2 and 11-1. You know, they were so successful for so long and so good and sustained it that when they went 11-1, we sometimes confuse that with a bad year at Alabama. We would be like, well, you know, they did lose that home game to Ole Miss. That was stunning. Like, that's the way we talked about them. So, sure, DeBoer is going to have to show that there's not that steep a drop-off, but he's armed to the teeth with elite players, and I do think him to be a good coach. How far could they really fall? I mean, we think Alabama's going to go 8-4 this year? I don't really see that. I think 10-2, 9-3, worst case scenario for Bama.
Well, if Milroe's still the quarterback, they could lose three games. If you lose three games, I mean, the world is coming to an end there.
It's glorious. I'm here for it. Let's go.
That was part of the conversation we had when Mike Norvell was weighing his options and seeing what was available to him, what was realistic. Is Tuscaloosa really calling him and saying you're number one on the list? Because the thing is, you're a made man here, and you're about to get a nice raise and some more yeses in terms of promises. If you leave here and you go to Alabama, same situation for DeBoer, you go from a place where your seat could not be any cooler and more comfortable to immediate grinder. You've got 2 years to prove it, and if you don't, you're out, and that could set your career back for a long, long time.
Be interesting. You know, I think in the case of the teams that we mentioned, it's funny, most fan bases, if you look at this list, so, you know, who's under the most pressure to perform in 2024? I rattled off the names that were proposed on this list where I'm making fun of myself for clicking it. Southern Cal, Penn State, Ohio State, Miami, Florida, Clemson, and Alabama. The fans of those teams would all say themselves. If you're a Penn State fan, certainly you're going to say, okay, I've had it with you, Franklin. We beat up on everybody not named Michigan and Ohio State. We're able to beat everybody else in this conference, but the games that you got to win against the two most prominent teams in this league, you never win. And in fact, you never even muster an ounce of offense in these games. So they're going to say themselves. The Ohio State fans are so pissed off that Michigan was able to rise up during Ryan Day's tenure at Ohio State and then surpass Ohio State, who dominated Michigan forever. Now they hate Ryan Day, even though he's been very successful. They're looking at him going, USOB, you let them get off the mat, didn't you? And now they're celebrating the national championship in our face. So they're going to say themselves. Clemson fans, in Dabo's antiquated way of viewing the portal, frustrated Florida State has retaken control of the ACC. This would be a referendum on Clemson if Florida State were to back it up and win the league again. And once again, antiquated Wuhan Dabo out here lamenting the transfer portal, they would say themselves, Florida fans probably fit to be tied at this point. Looking at Sunbelt Billy and saying, you know, this just didn't work. I thought Sunbelt Billy would come in here and get it done. He hasn't gotten it done. He's gotten pithy with the media on the regular because of the colossal special teams mistakes that we make every effing Saturday. And now this schedule, we're going to go 5-7 or 4-8. I can't deal with it. So it's us. Keep going. They're all going to say it's them for the reasons that you gave Southern Cal. Oddly, this might be just because of where we're located. I almost don't count Southern Cal as being significant in any way. It feels like Southern Cal hasn't mattered in a long time. Long enough that I'm forgetful. Then I'm like, Reggie Bush hasn't been around Southern Cal in a long, long time. Pete Carroll's been in the pros forever. Southern Cal hasn't mattered in forever. Why should they start mattering now?
They do open with LSU on September the 1st. And there is a hot seat special game for USC because they do host Penn State on October the 12th. A nice weird matchup with excellent uniforms, but that's October the 12th on the West Coast between Penn State and USC. So that would be a hot seat special. Before that game, USC will have played LSU and Michigan. USC plays at the Big House on September 21st.
They go 1-1 in that. They're fine. And also, he's not truly on the hot seat. They're paying him gazillions of dollars. Franklin is, though. I think they're going to be looking long and hard at Franklin. Penn State might be having an existential crisis. Do they really matter? It's not 1984, Joe Paterno. We're not out here ignoring child rape and winning games anymore. We're just kind of an also ran in this league. Third, fourth tier in this league. Don't know that they matter all that much. Somebody somewhere at Penn State's thinking that. Now, that may not be the way I look at them, or maybe it is. But I think that they're sort of, if you're a fan, if that's your squad, if that's where you went to school, you're kind of like, you know, do we really matter?
When did we become Wisconsin? That's what I want to know.
Who might matter more than Penn State and has for some time? See, there you go. You say that out loud, it hurts your feelings. And now the Big Ten's added USC and Oregon and Washington. Where does Penn State rank now? Ooh, that's the existential crisis. That's the, are we the ninth most important team in our newfound league? Sweet Jesus, I woke up and we ceased to matter in any way. This is our concern, dude. Yes, and a great one. And that could lead to Franklin being told, have a good day. On its face, you might say that's absurd. A guy wins 9-10 games a year. The only games he loses are to Ohio State and Michigan, but he always loses to Ohio State or Michigan. At some point, you do have to win those games. Hell, I love Mike Norvell and feel like he's done a great job. Pull around and lose to Florida four straight years. See how we talk about Mike Norvell or Miami.
Well, okay. Also, how long do you think James Franklin has been at Penn State?
Golly, you know, I don't pay attention to Penn State because they don't matter.
Mm. Remember, he was the
guy coming out of Vanderbilt. Yeah.
Not 2014.
Well, I was going to say 10 years. Okay.
The Not Tonight Haters year for Florida State football was James Franklin's first year. And it is bordering on some Marvin Lewis-ness here, you know. the lack of results.
Well, what's tough is that Marvin would go and win enough games to go to the playoffs, and you'd be like, oh, look at the Bengals are back in the playoffs. Ain't going to do a damn thing, but they're there.
They had their chance. Penn State had their chance if they wanted to make a change after 2021, because in the COVID year, they went 4-5. That's a toughie.
You don't even count it. Yeah.
But he went 7-6 the next year. So there was your chance. That's 11 wins in two seasons, albeit one is COVID. But then he's bounced back with 11-2 and 10-3. Marvin Lewis, my hands are tied. He's winning double-digit games. You blew it. You had a chance. And maybe now this year, if they go 8-4, that might be enough to say thank you very much.
I think it's Penn State and Miami. I don't think it's the other teams. I don't think it's Southern Cal. I don't think it's Alabama. I don't think it's Clemson, although Clemson, they'll start getting frustrated. They'll get vocal. Now, again, Clemson fans, the logical, fair-minded, reasonable ones, know that prior to Dabo Swinney getting to Clemson, whole lot of nothing. You got a one-year outlier under Ford. You had that amazing national championship run, but there was not. I was about to curse. There wasn't much to hang your hat on. So you can get kind of mad with Dabo's antics and his stance towards the transfer portal. But in truth, what are we talking about here? You were irrelevant in this sorry ass league. You were irrelevant forever. And he made you a giant. He's going to get a lot of wiggle room. A lot of wiggle room.
You got to put up with his TikToks about drip. That's right. You got to put up with it. This is the bed you lay in right now.
Well, you got to put up with the stupid, TikToks about drip and the gloves and the rhyming and the, whatever.
This program was made in God's image and likeness.
Name, image, likeness, God's image and likeness. All the nonsense that he preys upon a lot of folks, naivete. Yes, he does. Not unlike a televangelist, indeed. So that's the tough part. But they've got a huge. I mean, they're, what are they gonna do? You're not firing him anytime soon. So I'm excluding him. But it would be fun to watch him fidget. Jeff Cameron Show 93.3 Real Talk Radio War Chant TV. Hey, Seminoles, we all know how important it is to score in the red zone, but are you prepared for success in the retirement red zone? 5 years leading up to your retirement date and the immediate 5 years after are a critical time of thoughtful planning for you and your family. And our friend and fellow Knoll, Adam Tolliver, and his team at Artisan Financial Strategies are prepared to coach you to victory. Some of us, well, we're at midfield and want to plan ahead. Others are ready to punch it in on the goal line. Whether making sure you know how much you can spend without running out of money, protecting yourself and your family against rising healthcare costs, or carefully planning your legacy, the Artisan team brings a combined 30-plus years of planning experience and world-class resources to help you navigate the way. For more information, just head over to KnollRetirement.com. Now, that's one word, KnollRetirement.com. Jeff Cameron Show rolling on a Redemption Thursday. Good to be with you. Let's solve for the future. Let's bring in our friends from ISF. Love our collaboration with our friends at ISF. They've done great work with us and great work in the community. They're a national company, too, from right here in Tallahassee, Florida. That's cool. ISF, empowering government agencies, modernizing, streamlining that approach, making sure that a lot of these groups that help, we talk about it all the time, and I've talked about it, Tom, with the fact that they are on board with the second harvest of the Big Bend, collecting food, hurricane preparedness, those kinds of things. They've been with the Department of Children and Families. Obviously, the fine folks at the Guardian Ad Litem. All of those things are near and dear to my heart, and they do good work, and they enable them to reach out in those communities and do the most amount of good, does ISF. And they are also a group that is steeped in methodologies that will tailor the project to your needs. So if you're in state government and you have big dreams and hopes and wishes and you want some help with that, ISF can help streamline that process and help you out. ISF.com to learn more. And I don't know, we were talking about the future. We were talking about those other programs. It's nice to be able to do that feeling as if your program, our program, Florida State's program, is in good hands right now. But it would go an awful long way when we start fall camp to solve for the future if what we're 100% sure of, certainty, something that we're not sure of right now. Is it right tackle? Is that what you'd look at first? We had an answer at right tackle. Somebody either Byers improving or being replaced by Otto or somebody like that, or perhaps Robert Scott comes back and slides to right and Darius Washington's at left. How would you view that situation?
That would help a whole lot of things. Yeah. If you have, because, you know, Coach Norvell in the offseason has been speaking about Robert Scott, calling him out by name, talking about how this offensive line, he said it on the McElroy podcast that claimed that Florida State only had two undefeated regular seasons. Mm-hmm. Mike Norvell said that this is the best offensive line that we will have had here at Florida State. Well, he's not in the business of hyperbole. That there's no benefit for him to go on McElroy's show and say that. There's no benefit. I find it very fascinating that he feels this far out from fall camp without having seen fall camp play out, that the spring was enough, that the reports from the workouts are enough, that he believes this is going to be his best offensive line. If that's true, if what he believes and what he's saying publicly is true, a lot of your problems are solved on offense. That the second receiver position is a concern, but it's one that's mitigated by a good offensive line because that will generate more time. It'll generate good opportunities for play action. So it makes the passing game all that much more lethal without having to rely on jump balls like last year.
100% accurate, because here's the deal. If you've got a quarterback with a massive arm and you want to utilize said arm and stretch the field and, you know, you brought in a ton of speed in order to do just that, the one thing that's required is that is a slow developing play, no matter the speed. If you're throwing the ball 50 to 60 yards downfield, this offensive line has to hold up and provide a clean pocket. So there's no doubt all eyes on that group to see if, in fact, they are, as Mike Norvell alluded to, the best since he's been here. A big part of that was on last night's list, 25 to 21 in the War Chant Top 40 that Matt Lacerre and myself talked about, which was both Ferguson and Leonard and their abilities to upgrade this offensive line. I think so often we look at that because of the sheer size of these two individuals that we think that they're going to help out in the run game, which in turn then helps out the passing game, as you just pointed out. But I think for sure in the case of Leonard, you're going to see improvement there. Ferguson's got to continue to grow. Look, he didn't play a lot at Alabama. He emerged slowly but surely, eventually getting in 12 games. This is a real opportunity for him to take the big, big step forward and be a complete lineman. Turns out he was better against the pass or as a pass blocker last year than he was a run blocker. He's a guy that I think has to use that size, use that leverage to take a big step forward there. Now, it's, you know, I'm not solely talking about a PFF grade or whatever that is called, but I am saying that that he's a guy that on tape could improve run blocking. I thought he looked pretty good in spring. I thought Leonard looked real good in spring. Those two both could change the dynamics of this offensive line, but right tackle will remain the question. That's why I posed it as I did. Solving the future to me is going to be right tackle. That's the area. You know Washington's manning one or the other, and he's solid. So whichever one he's not manning, do you got a dude? Because Byers was not a dude last year. He was just a placeholder.
Yeah, agreed. He can improve. There's room for development. That can happen. You can get better at the position. A quick footnote to the guard positions. I would agree Leonard is the more proven player of the two that you brought in. But you have solutions beyond Ferguson in case right. You want to rotate other bodies. You know, Bryson Estes was somebody who had an excellent spring camp and was elevated up and got more important reps as camp went along. But Keandre Jones is also extremely valuable, I think. I think he's a really good player, and especially if you want to get in short yardage and try to move the line of scrimmage, Keandre Jones is the body type that suggests, yeah, man, he's up for it. If Ferguson is better in pass protection, but you're in a short yardage or in your four-minute offense because you're trying to close out a game, then put Keandre out there. You've got solutions. At tackle, you're close to having second and third waves of players. You're close. They love Jalen Early. Mike Norvell continues to talk about Jalen Early.
But
let's say that he becomes what Mike Norvell envisions him to be. Well, that's one solution beyond Byers. Another one is Robert Scott's health. Another one is Andre Otto, potentially. Another one is Lucas Simmons. So you're starting to cultivate depth in both areas. Center, probably Ferguson behind Maurice Smith. I think that's why Stickle left and transferred in the offseason. They're like, well, we've got an emergency center now.
My man Stickle. Always liked Stickle.
He got a lot of important practice reps for a long time.
He did.
So anybody he's going against at his next destination will not be what he saw at Florida State with the defensive interior, especially after last year's practices going against those behemoths.
I used to think about poor Stickle. He garnered all the backup reps, and he's going against monsters just ragtagging his ass all around. I mean, just, man, that was tough.
Well, and the backup reps were the starter reps for a lot of those practices because Maurice was playing through it, and so he only had so many reps in him in a given week. So Stickle, as trial by fire, he was a very important piece to the organization. Like, for real, that's not chiding. He was important to the organization.
I'll always doff the cap, 64. I'll always doff the cap. You hung in there. You hung in there. There were days where I saw Farmer grab you, throw you around like a rag doll, toss you off to the side as if you were a child, but you were right back on your feet for that next trip. You tough son of a bitch. I always respect Stickle.
He'll be a very tough person in life because of the experiences he went against Florida State's defensive interior. But as you start to list these names out for this season, just give me development or health for any two of Robert Scott, Andre Otto, and Lucas Simmons. Give me for two of them, not all three. Give me health.
Can I add Armella to the list? Can I add Armella to the list? I mean, I'm shocked he is still here. I'm stunned that he's still here. It seemed to me that it was inevitable that he was going to take it on down the road. And yet he's still here, and I commend him for it. And I tell you something else, in the spring, Buddy was locked in, working hard, Tom. He wasn't always good, but he was working really hard and seemed locked in. You know, when you would watch the coaches talk to him, he didn't have that faraway glaze over his eyes. You know, he was doing what one has to do to try to get better. So for all of the times that I thought either for NIL money or promises of a, you know, greener pasture that he would leave, he's still here. And there have been snapshots. We've both seen it where he's been good, where you see the glimpse of why he was so highly touted coming out of high school. He doesn't sustain them. They haven't been prolonged snapshots. They've been a glimpse here and there. He could develop this offseason too.
And I think that development would probably be a guard. Oh, I mean, they flexed
him. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But at that point, he's an ace in the hole weapon. If he could ever – remember we had the conversation about potential realized? Man, there's another one. Just because that athleticism that he has, he's fast. Like, straight up, he's fast.
For his size, yeah.
You put that athleticism into this gap scheme that we like to run, he's perfect for it. It's just,
if he can stay off his ass.
That's the whole thing. You know, the deal has to be, I need you to get through a practice or two without, you know, with only your cleats touching the ground. Unless we need your hand in the ground before a snap. I mean, post-snap, it's just your cleats are the only thing that touch the ground. Because he does have those moments. There are pancake blocks that are uncomfortable. There were pass protection reps against Jared Verse when he was a freshman that were very technical. Then Jared would get mad and throw him on his butt.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and different guys on that defensive front have taken turns getting mad and throwing him on his ass. It's not like it's one. Like, if it was only that Jared Verse threw you around, you'd be like, well, dude's a first-round draft pick. I mean, it could happen. No. Lots of guys have taken turns throwing him around.
I was hoping when he moved to guard that would happen a little bit less. And, you know, the couple days I was there, he might have been on the ground a couple times. So, but then again, in the old school way of football development was designed.
Right. Oh, yeah.
He's on schedule. In the new school way of I need this five-star to be good now, we're past due. So if the old school wins out, then he's right on track.
Yeah, I think so too. And it is fair to point that out. We do tend to expedite things now in a way that's unfair to the athlete that comes in. Part of that, though, is the direct result of somebody getting paid. Be careful what you wish for, right? This is the situation. Like, you want to be paid, you want money, fine. The babying that went on and development that went on in the past was made a little bit more tolerable by the fact that it was a scholarship and it was going to take time and all those things. Now, if you're pulling six figures and you're not playing, man, hey, buddy, you got to get the hell up out of here. We don't have time for all this nonsense. Thanks to our friends at ISF, ISF.com to learn more. Love collaborating with them. Love our work with them. I'll have more stuff coming down the pike about ISF. Some things we're going to be doing this fall here real soon. Jeff Cameron Show, 93.3 Real Talk Radio and War Chant TV. So I saw in the chat there, Tom, and I know you responded to it, Reezy, right? And who he was asking about? Did I see that correctly?
Reezy, the Ivy League man himself.
Yeah, the Harvard kid, right? Well, we'll see, Peter. Tough to compare and contrast when you're looking at Harvard football and Florida State football. So that's you can't know. I'm not saying he can't do it. Not saying he won't come in and be a breath of fresh air. Maybe he's a really good player. Maybe right off the bat we're like, okay. But I'm going to need to see that.
Kurt had a good answer too in the Heisman Leica chat for because you said if blank happens, then the future is solved. And he put that DJU had 100% command of the offense. What if DJ comes in with an understanding of whatever facet of Mike Norvell's offense he wants to feature this year, and you just see total command, pre-snap judgments, you know, checks. Mike Norvell is commenting about how he's checking us into the right plays, all those things.
Yeah, and I think he will. I think they'll get him up to speed. I think he'll be pretty close to that. If not 100%, he'll have a real good handle on what they want him to do. I still think you need improvement at right tackle. I still think you're going to need a number two receiver to emerge. I still think there's some other facets of what we're talking about here that have to happen for the team to be a repeat champion of the league, playoff contender to go deep, those kinds of things. I think they'll get enough out of him. It's interesting. I don't know at any point this year, regardless if he's had 100% understanding of the offense or 90% or whatever it is, I don't know if at any point we're going to say, boy, that DJU is surefire, can't miss first-round pick. I kind of just think what he is, you know, he's a good player. He hasn't been a great player. He has moments where he excels and you feel very good about who he is as a player. There are moments where you kind of scratch your head, wonder how it is that we don't complete that pass. It's a simple throw to make, and he missed him by 10 yards. I don't really know that that's going to change, right? I think it may be unfair to think that that's going to change much. Some other statistics may see a bump because of the way that he's utilized and the way that Mike plays to his strengths and Mike plays and calls plays. I think that Mike is a kind of a Mike's kind of a cheat code for quarterbacks. He does a very good job because of what his offense is. You're gonna put up some good numbers. You're gonna have some statistics that look good for you. But I don't know if he's gonna become an appreciably different quarterback.
That the thing this year is, I fully expect to see whiffs, for a lack of a better term, with throws, like the equivalent of a whiff.
Yeah,
but Jordan Travis development does give me pause. Because Jordan got so much better, and I get there's diminishing returns on development. Like, once you take a giant first leap, the second step can't be as much growth. You can't double it. It's just there is a diminishing return towards being realized and being a draftable NFL prospect. But the fact that Jordan took the leaps that he did as a passer, somebody who processes information, somebody who can win over the middle of the field more than certainly we expected him to be able to, does give me a little bit of outside hope that maybe, just maybe, they can pull something off with DJ that's akin to it. It doesn't have to be huge, but maybe it leads to a 64.7% completion percentage and you're not giving up a ton of air yards down the field. Like, if that's what they can do for DJ, then, man, you've unlocked a whole lot of possibilities here offensively.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, if they're able to run the ball and win first down at a much higher clip than they did a year ago, lots of things could change. I'd be so excited. His life would become so much easier if they're just able to run the ball. I thought last year the frustrations, for me, they were palpable. And I think obviously for Mike too, you know, that there were just factors that we did not anticipate that made his offense hamstrung. And the biggest of those factors was that they could not run the ball the way they wanted to. They hit home runs. Benson was able to do enough with that unbelievable speed for his size. He'd make a mistake. If you missed a fill and he got outside, instead of 18 yards, it would be 68. He did things like that for you because he was uniquely gifted in that way. But they did not run the ball with any degree of consistency. And then I think the other part that was so frustrating, we've talked about it time and again, DJU should help you here. I mean, this sounds cruel to say, but what do you owe him? You know, I felt like with Jordan Travis, there was this, okay, look, man, you've been through hell and back. We tried to recruit around you and over you and did all these other things. And now we realize you have come a long way. You can run this offense. You do give us the best chance to win. So I'm certainly going to cater, but I'm also going to allow you the opportunity to prove that you can be an NFL quarterback. So I'm not going to have you run as much. I also know that we really don't have a backup at this point. So I kind of don't even want to call you to run as much. And there were other times he just refused to run. And so an entire aspect of your offense was removed, was off the table. And I don't know that you owe DJ that. I mean, I if I felt like it, I'd run his ass 12 times a game.
Well, I mean, and you could tell
he's a giant.
It's going to be a base part of the offense, too. The read option first with a bubble outlet and whatever scheme they want to call. That run, where you hand it to the tailback or the halfback, whatever, could be a gap scheme. It could be a zone run. It could be a dive, but it's going to have the option where DJ keeps the ball. And then the option extends. This is very Jordan Travis first year in the offense, road trip to North Carolina stuff. Like, we're okay. There's one point of an option here. We're going to read off the edge defender. Cool. I'm going to keep the ball. He crashed for the running back, Lorenzo Featherston. He went right after the running back. Now I'm rolling out to the right and you can still throw the ball. I can still do this because we've got two blockers on the right, and he'll keep it for 6 yards in that instance, or he'll throw it out there and you get four. What that I feel is going to be a base play. I don't think that was just spring showcase vanilla offense. I think that they intend to do that. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is they believe DJ's body can take the punishment, and he seems willing to do that as well. He was asked that question how many times when he first got here on campus?
I think because everybody's wanting to see it again. They're like, come on, man. Can we have our offense back? I need your big ass to get out there and run over somebody. I would hate to tackle that dude. If he got past the line of scrimmage, next thing you knew, he's like 4 to 5 yards. Now, he is not fleet of foot. Don't get me wrong. He's not going to make you pay in the same sort of way that Jordan Travis made you pay. Jordan could be a house call from 70 if you missed a tackle. That's not DJ, but DJ could run your ass over at 255 pounds. That's not a fun tackle to have to come up and make. No, let's see.
He's not a house call from 70, but he can run you over, and you're feeling it in your house at 70 still from him running your ass over. Oh, God. That was September 14th. We went down to Tallahassee, and, well, DJ popped me in the chest in a way I've never recovered from.
Yeah, it's brutal. Reminder to everybody out there really quickly, my friends at Social Kitchen, you want to learn more, socialkitchentlh.com. It's Thursday. Week's kind of flown past. You can start looking ahead to next week and say to yourself, you know, I don't feel like cooking. I've got some downtime. Well, why don't you have a chef trio? Pick it up. Go grab these three meals. I mean, every time you look at their menu, if you go to socialkitchentlh.com, you can do this. You'll see something new, something different, easy to reheat, already cooked for you, feeds upwards of 4 to 8 people. Good stuff. Bradley sausage peppers. Ooh. You can get mozzarella stuffed meatballs. Doesn't suck. Doesn't suck. Pineapple chicken. Doesn't suck as well. It's different. They mix it up all the time, but it's always professionally done. Elite chef. It's a chance to go in there. Also, if you go off of Carry Force and take a look inside, just look at the glass, through the glass, I should say, and all those meats. You're like, ooh, that's Wagyu. Look at those meats. It's very, very good. SocialKitchenTLH.com. You'll see what I'm talking about right there. Guys still haven't lost since what's-his-face throughout the first pitch. Is that right?
No, we lost last night.
Oh, I didn't see that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Gave up a two-run bomb in the seventh to lose 5-3. That's all right. 7-1 in the grimace era of Mets baseball. So that's A-okay. And you know what that's going to do? I'm sure they didn't intend for this. It's going to be a happy accident because the winning came behind it. That alternate City Connect jersey has grimace purple in it. So those hats are going to fly off the shelves because of the grimace effect.
I will play this, but I will not play the bed, so you don't have to worry about telling everybody to go to hell on YouTube.
It's time for, how you say, with the pitching, probables?
Arizona leads Washington 4-2. Ryan Nelson, Mackenzie Gore starting that game. 2-2 Minnesota and Tampa Bay, Minnesota. Zach Little, Simeon Woods, Richardson. 5-3 Cleveland leading Seattle. That was Luis Castillo, Logan Allen. A lot of day baseball today, everybody. We got 1-0 Houston leading the White Sox. That is Spencer Arrighetti. Chris Flexen going for the White Sox. Dodgers, Rockies coming up. Gavin Stone, Ty Blash. Royals, A's, Seth Lugo, Mitch Spence. Orioles, Yankees. Good game. Cole Irvin, Luis Gill. Giants, Cardinals, Keaton Wynn, Andre Pallante, Brewers, Padres, Bryce Wilson, Adam Mazur. That is a look at those that shall reside on the bump. Yesterday, when we were talking about Willie Mays and the unreal numbers and all of those things, Tom, I mentioned to you the story that I wanted to get to but didn't get to about he and Satchel Paige. Did I ever reference that to you? Did I forward you that?
Mm-mm, no.
Memphis, Tennessee, 1948. Willie Mays is 18 years old, faces Satchel Paige. This is the old Negro Leagues, and Satchel Paige doesn't know who Willie Mays is, a young buck just out of high school. Just to see how Willie would react, he throws him a curveball in the first pitch, even though Satchel Paige was said to throw 103 back in his day. Willie hits it off the top of the wall for a triple to the deepest part of the park. Gets to third. Satchel Paige looks over at his dugout and says, "Tell me when that little boy comes to the plate again." Quote unquote, Satchel Paige about Willie Mays trying to disrespect him. Batters go around, another inning. Up comes Willie Mays. Satchel Paige gets the whistle from the dugout. It's the kid again. "Oh, it's you, little boy. Look what's going to happen here. I'm going to throw you three pitches and you're going to sit back down." Willie Mays laughs and says to himself, "No chance. If you throw me the same pitch three times in a row, I'm going to hit it a mile." Satchel Paige smiles. Willie smiles. First pitch, fastball. Swing and miss. Next pitch, smile. Fastball. Swing and miss. Third pitch, fastball. Swing and miss. Satchel Paige, "You'll get there someday, punk. Go sit down. Willie Mays said he never forgot it, loved it, reminded Satchel Paige years later of the conversation, of which Satchel Paige didn't remember it. How great is that?
We don't remember a lot of things we say in the heat of moments or the heat of emotion. He was, hey, he was challenged. Yeah. Pitchers don't like when their autonomy or whatever is challenged. Pedro was like that. Bob Gibson was like that. Clemens was like that. Yeah.
You know the one I sent you? I sent you the Pedro one of he and Sheffield. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, that is just and just staring back at 170 pounds soaking wet.
You don't call timeout on me.
Not twice. Not twice. That second one, he was done. Say goodbye, Tom.
Bye-bye.
Tom is gone, but he'll be back tomorrow. So will I on a Libations Friday. We could all use a Libations Friday. I think that's true. You guys enjoy the rest of your evening. Jeff Cameron Show returns tomorrow, and we'll talk to you then. Be well, everybody. And as I'm fond of saying, peace. Be good.